said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome, welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show. And my name is Karen Watts. I'm Karen at petoftheday.com, as always, in case you have a pet chicken or, you know, a pet llama or whatever you have. And we have with us Joe Barber, Country Joe himself.
I'm here. Ready to go.
from the swamps of Florida. All right. Maybe you're not in the swamp. And our first guest with us today is Christine Heinrichs. Welcome, Christine.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Joe. It's good to be here.
Hey, it's fun to have you back.
Yeah, so, you know, it is spring, and it is that time of year when people, even people who aren't like Joe, who only get, you know, a few chicks at a time, people are starting to raise chicks, some of them for the first time. And I know your book is How to Raise, it used to be How to Raise Chickens, and it's now How to Raise Poultry, right?
No, actually, there's two separate books, Karen. There's How to Raise Chickens and How to Raise Poultry. The chickens book obviously focuses entirely on chickens, but there was so much interest after that came out that then I wrote How to Raise Poultry, which includes a chapter on chickens, but also has material on ducks, geese, turkeys, guinea fowl, swans, you name it. We've got everything in there. So if you're interested in other birds beyond chickens, that's sort of what I wanted to call it, but it's part of the FFA livestock series, so they're all called How to Raise Whatever. So, so there's a different book out there.
Well, there. So that's being a big hit, I bet, or is it starting to be?
Well, it really is. You know, the chickens book always sells better because I think people just want to, you know, that's their first interest is chickens, and they want to know all the details about that. But personally, I just love the poultry book because it gave me the opportunity to use so many beautiful photos of breeds that I wasn't necessarily familiar with, and other species entirely, like ostriches and emus. So it really helped me understand and put chickens as poultry into a different perspective against all the other kinds of poultry that people do raise.
Yeah, and you know, that would help out because a while back, I got some emus, didn't know a thing about them, and I was just shooting from the hip with those,
How'd that work out?
Well, half good and half bad. I live out here in the country, and now I believe they all live out in the woods wild if the coyotes haven't got them. I don't know. I had 4-foot fences, 5-foot fences, and they walked over those like nothing.
Like they were nothing.
Yeah. And I used to round them all back up, and they hung around for a long time, and then they used to just run and just go right over the fences, and I couldn't stop them. I had 8 of them at one time, and I couldn't tell, you know, one of them was making that drumming noise, you know, and I couldn't tell if it was the male or the female. I didn't know, and, you know, and I wasn't on the computer back then, so I didn't know much about it, but it worked out okay. I got kicked in the stomach a few times,
I imagine you would have done a lot better if you had Christine's book in front of you.
I would have. That's why I'm saying I'm glad somebody's finally writing a book about these because I wished I would have had it. And I'm glad I listened to the guy out at the farm because he had ostriches. And I said, I want to get an ostrich. And he says, Joe, they'll kill you. He told me that. He said, they'll kick you and they'll kill you. So he says, why don't you just get an emu? So I says, okay. And, you know, so I did that and with fairly good success. But it was a lot of fun. But now I don't have any. I'd like to get some more. But they tell me I need, 6-foot fences, right?
Yeah, I'm sure at least. This is definitely, it's not for the tyro. You know, this is definitely a different critter entirely from chickens. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's really a lot of interest out there. And even though that's never, you know, obviously emus and ostriches are never going to be as popular as chickens, but there's a lot of people who might take an interest like yourself and say, well, I'd like to give this a try, you know, and this is a way for people to kind of take a look at it, learn a little bit about it, and see if that helps them make a decision about getting in.
It would have helped me.
And, you know, I have actually, when years and years ago, we drove to Park Safari in Quebec, And I have hand-fed an emu, which was pretty much a wild emu. They have a park where you can drive through and feed the wild animals out the window. And it was amazing because that head moves faster than you can see.
Ah.
And my husband was just terrified that the beak was going to go right through my hand, and you could barely feel it. They would pick the grains of food out of your hand, and you could barely feel it. So, you know, they do have control when they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But that place had at least 10-foot fences between them and the woods.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that was my adventure on that. So, yeah. And I did learn a lot. But, you know, when I did start out, it would have been nice to have a book to know how much to feed and all of that sort of thing. And
right. Just something to point you in the right direction.
Right.
You know, obviously one book that just has one chapter on it isn't far from the whole story. But it helps to give you a flavor and give you some idea of what you're getting into.
Uh-huh.
And I know that this is the time of year, like we said, that a lot of people are getting chicks. Now, did you get the emus as chicks or as eggs that you hatched? And does your incubator even hold an emu egg?
Yeah, no, mine doesn't. No, I got some. They were half grown. They were probably about around 4 months old when I got them. And they were very friendly and everything. It's just when they got older and I tried to make one do something he didn't want to, he kicked me. So I learned don't force them to do stuff they don't want to do. But they hung around the house for the longest time. And then, like I say, I live right out in the woods. So they decided to go out in the woods and I never saw them again. So yeah. I don't know, you know, what happened. But you'd fence them in and they just – it was nothing, you know. But again, if I'd have known that, I probably wouldn't have got them or got higher fences, you know.
Right.
But so that was the thing about that. So I've been threatening to get some more because I did enjoy them. I mean, they were a lot of fun, and so I wanted to get more. And they make good guards. I know that they go all around the perimeter, the inside of the fence, and they won't let cats or dogs or anything in the yard. They go
after
them.
That powerful kick that you felt, that's how they can kill predators that way.
Yeah, and they keep them
out of the yard. If a coyote got in there, you know, one kick, and that could literally cave in a coyote's rib cage, and that's how they defend themselves in the wild.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep. So we had fun with those, and I'd love to get some more, but like I say, 6-foot fences are nothing now. So everybody tells me it's got to be 6-foot. But yeah, so it's interesting that you write about, you know, the different kind of birds, you know, that I don't know if you want to call it advanced chicken people like me, you know, said, well, let's try this, you know, that was fun, you know, but there's nowhere to go. So that is interesting.
I like that you have the two books so that if people are, you know, just interested in starting small, people who've never seen an emu, they get to be what, at least 5 feet tall? So if you want something you can manage, you know, chickens may be the best thing to start out with. You know, folks, we are running out of time for this segment. Christine, will you stick with us?
Sure. I sure will.
Excellent. We have a lot more to talk about. And you've been listening to Country Joe's Chicken Show. Here on the website is countryjoeschickenshow.com. How's that for you?
Hey, folks, that's pretty good.
Right back with more.
I'm a green
said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. Now, we have Christine Heinrichs here with us, and while we've been talking about emus, you have the whole book about chickens and raising them from scratch. I know some people recently got chicks because they got them for Easter as a project to raise with their kids. And, of course, we always advise against that until you do a ton of research. But if they're home and they have these two-week-old chicks, what would you tell them is the most important thing to learn to start out with going forward?
Well, you know, if they've got brand new chicks, I'll tell you one story. I was visiting with some friends the other day, and they said they were out at the beach, and they saw a young couple, a young man and woman. They were out on the beach, and each of them had a little chick in their hand. They were playing with them in the sand. And I'm sure that the chicks just loved that. They probably had a nice dirt bath there. But chicks are very delicate, and it can look like a lot of fun, but something like that can also be too much for them. You know, they're babies, mm-hmm. and they can be overwhelmed with exhaustion. They need to have plenty of water. You know, they need to have the right kind of feed. I've been mm-hmm. real happy with a supplement I've added to mine called Ultra Kibble for chicks, and they seem to like that a lot, and I think it's done very well. The chicks I have this year, I hatched just a few. Like you, Joe, I live in town, and I don't, well, unlike you, you live in the country, but I live in town and only do a few chicks at a time. And this year, I thought
And your neighbors would probably object to a five-foot-high emu in your backyard.
They would not be amused. They would definitely. They weren't even amused at a rooster. So they just have, I can't understand it. They have no sense of humor about this. But I put Lady Fanny, my speckled Sussex, on your pet of the day last year. She's my guest, Broody Hen. And I thought she was going to get broody again this year. She spent one afternoon shouting at all the other sisters and keeping them out of the nest box. So I thought, oh, okay, it's time for me to get her some eggs to hatch. And so I started looking around, and a friend in New Jersey said he'd send me some from his flock of Kalankas, which are South American, they're sort of the everyday chickens, a sort of mongrel. They're not a standardized breed. I understand Kalankas means tailless. So anyway, he sent me 8 eggs, and of course, then Fanny decided she wasn't going to go broody, so I ended up putting, it's just chickens, this is just the story of chickens. They're always, it's always the unexpected. I always think of James Herriot writing about the veterinarian and about how this is the being a veterinarian is the kind of job that always can be counted on to make you look like a fool. Anyway, that's just the way they are. So anyway, we hatched 4 of these. Mm-hmm. 3 of the eggs were blue, sort of medium-sized eggs, and the others were really small bantam-sized white eggs. And 3 of those hatched and hatched out black chicks, and the one blue one hatched out a white chick. So they're about a month old now, and I've been real happy with them.
Wow.
You know, of course, with chicks, what people don't may not realize is how important it is to keep them warm.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about that. How warm do you have to keep a chick, and to what age do you have to really monitor their temperature?
Well, you want to monitor them until they're really fully feathered and they are managing their own temperature. And to some extent, it depends on the ambient temperature, how warm it is where you live. You know, I'm out here in California where it's pretty warm. But, you know, you usually start them out at about 95 degrees that first week and figure on reducing that by 5 degrees a week until you're down to ambient temperature. So that's going to be about 4 or 5 weeks.
See, I start mine at 99.5 degrees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's what I've been doing. And, okay. You know, of course, I do.
But you've got a higher ambient temperature where you are and more humidity than Christine has in California, and way warmer than I have up here in Boston.
Right.
Uh-huh. But I still get a 10% loss on these things. I don't know. That's pretty standard, I'm hearing, in the industry, right, on baby chicks?
I think it probably is.
Yeah,
not every chick survives, you know.
No.
it just doesn't, and that's a real sad reality. But but the other thing is that as you're doing this, watch for how the chicks are responding. You know, if they're clustering up together under that light, they're not warm enough. If they're trying to get away from the light, they're too warm.
Right.
So, you know, bear in mind, just, you know, use your common sense, see what they look like, see how they're behaving, and keep adjusting it. And you do have to kind of keep an eye on them because they can change. You know, they're growing feathers from the beginning, and they're going to start, you know, doing better. But you definitely have to, you know, you have to be able to be flexible and respond to what's happening.
And there was an interesting thing around here. I think it was around here. I was reading it, or somebody was telling me about it, where this guy had an ad, I guess it was in a paper, for people that wanted baby chicks for Easter for their kids. He would rent you two chickens, day old, with the food and the whole, and all the instructions, and you could keep them for 2 weeks. And at the end of 2 weeks, you brought them back. And he's, I guess it was a big success. Everybody was doing it because they, you know, he told you how to keep them warm and the whole thing, and gave you a pound of food and two baby chicks. And when they started to, you know, when they start to grow the feathers after 2 weeks, you know, and the kids lose interest, back to the farm they went. So that was the first time I ever heard of anybody renting baby chicks for 2 weeks.
Well, I know some people who haven't actually rented them, but they certainly have helped young people who, for whatever reason, couldn't have adult birds at their home, but the kids wanted to have baby chicks and this and that, and she would just loan them out and just get people set up that way. And, you know, she got back the most darling pet chickens, because, of course, those kids just showered them with attention.
Yeah.
And did a great job raising them. And I think that's great. I think it's a great way in. It's a great introduction for people. And that's, you know, that's what we really need to do, is help people. I feel like we're all part of an educational movement, and we're helping educate our friends about what chickens are like and how they fit into our lives. And if they fit in for just 2 weeks in the life of a kid, you know, that could be just a life-changing experience for that kid. And who knows, the next
especially,
year, they might get in deeper.
Especially for kids in an area like I'm in the suburbs of Boston, and a lot of kids have never even met a chicken, have no idea where the eggs come from, you know, think the eggs are born in a styrofoam container in the supermarket. And so having them have hands-on with these, and of course, the baby chicks are adorable, and but after a certain time when they're starting to get their adult feathers, they go through that awkward stage, and by then, when they're not quite as adorable, if they go back to the person who originally had them, you know, that's probably best for everyone concerned.
That's right.
Yeah. That's absolutely right, and people are at all different levels about this, so if that's where they are right now, fine. And, you know, I bet those kids go to school and just tell their teachers and their classmates all about them, and that they're wonderful ambassadors.
And, you know, we start them young. And
that's right. That's right. Get those chicks into them young, and they'll never give it up.
That's right. Oh, well, we are out of time for this segment. Folks, we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show. Country Joe's Chicken Show. Now, while we have Christine Heinrichs here with us, who has her book is How to Raise Poultry, one of her books, and I want to mention you can find that on Amazon.com and anywhere books are sold. And I know Joe desperately wants to talk about raising game birds. So that would be covered in How to Raise Poultry, right?
It is. And my God, the pictures are so beautiful in this book. You know, I've got the copy in front of me here, the swans and all this. and it's just so interesting. I mean, you really went into detail about all of this stuff. That's what I love. I mean, close-ups and the whole thing. Did you take these pictures, Christine?
I took some of them, but most of them I got from other people who are really experts in their own fields. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously I'm not an expert with everything from quail to white pheasants, but other people are, and they've been so helpful to me, and so I'm always grateful to others to, hear whatever their experiences are.
Yeah, some of these I'd like to cut out of the book and frame. I mean, they're that good. I mean, they're really beautiful. Some of the swans and whatnot, you know, because I've a lot of these swans I've never even seen for real, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the things I liked. It really gave me an opportunity to take a look, and hopefully other people will enjoy that, to see the range of kinds of birds that are out there.
Yeah.
So, though I don't know if Joe's wife would agree with us even giving him a copy of this book, because you know he's going to want to raise the pheasants. He's going to. I would advise against you having swans, Joe, because I know you don't like being attacked. Oh,
I don't have a pond, so I wouldn't torture them. You know, I don't have a pond, but if I did, then I'd be scared because we got a lot of critters out here. You know, bobcats and. I've caught 3 bobcats already this winter, so, you know, so I'd be really afraid of losing those swans or what, like $1,000, $2,000. I just would die, you know.
But I know
but like those emus, swans are formidable defenders.
Oh, really?
So, they are. They can break a man's leg.
They, wow. they really are, and actually the sewage treatment plant out on the Massachusetts Turnpike, it's right off the Milbury exit for anybody who's in the Boston area. There's a sewage treatment plant right near the exit, and people love to see the swans there, but the swans are there because they have sheep to mow the grass, don't have to pay someone to mow the grass, but the sheep by themselves were getting attacked by dogs from the area. They got swans, and the dogs don't come anywhere near. Those sheep are the most protected sheep you could ever want.
No kidding. Swans are formidable, and they're actually, in some places, they're kind of a problem. But that's covered in the book a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think somewhere in there's actually some description of how to create some small wetlands. Of course, don't tell your wife I told you this, Joe.
Yeah, she just turns her head now. She don't pay any attention.
But I know during the break when we weren't on the air, Joe, you were talking about maybe getting some white pheasants.
White pheasants, yeah. Yeah. I'd love to eat, you know, white pheasant. Or, you know, raise them for meat. That's my next project. But like I said, they're very expensive. You know, like I said, $172 for 25. You know, I'd have to raise them a while here before I started processing them. But
and how long? I mean, pheasants are such beautiful creatures. But why would you want the white ones besides aesthetics?
When you pluck them, you don't get the dark pin feathers like a dark turkey or a dark chicken. When you pluck them, you see the dark pin feathers, and it doesn't look appetizing to people. So what they've done, they created the white birds, you know, like the white meat chickens and the white turkeys. When you pluck them, the pin feathers are there, but they're white and you don't see them. You know, most of the time we get most of them out, but if they're in there, it looks like a little black spot or, you know. So that's why everybody goes to white birds, because, you know, it just looks like a cleaner bird.
And how long does it take to raise a pheasant from would you hatch them yourself, or do you get them as chicks?
Well, I get them as chicks, but it takes 6 months before their market age, which is about 4.5-5 pounds from what I understand. And that's really big if you get them up to that part, you know.
Yeah. So.
And will they? I'm only used to pheasants, of course, in the wild. They used to, there used to be a papa pheasant with 3 of his flock of the females who aren't nearly as spectacular looking, who would come down the hill when I lived in Newton, and so I'm used to them being, you know, fairly solitary creatures. Will they flock? Like maybe Christine, you can answer that because you did the book on the game fowl. Will pheasants flock like you can with chickens?
Well, you know, the white ones that you're going to get as a shipment from Stromberg's hatchery, they'll grow up accustomed to each other. They do need some space so that they don't, you know, get overcrowded, but they don't mind being raised in a flock. They can be raised in confinement perfectly happily.
Mm-hmm.
And are there, now we've talked about, you know, ducks and swans, they do need water, and Joe doesn't have water. And
although he might build a small wetland.
Ah. Oh, my. We'll have every rattlesnake and critter in there.
Some alligators will hear about it,
yes,
and make the hike over from the Everglades.
And
but are there different kinds of game fowl that do better in small flocks, or are there some that you should only raise a few at a time, or how does that work?
Well, there are with ducks and geese, there are wild ones and there are domesticated varieties. And so if you're going to raise them in confinement, you really want to get domesticated varieties. And you can get into problems anyway taking any kind of game fowl from the wild. It is possible in some cases to do that, but you have to have special permits. So you can't just go out and trap some birds and bring them in and start raising them. You do need the domesticated varieties that you would get either from a breeder or from a hatchery.
We're running down on this segment, and we're going to lose you after this.
So I wanted
to give you a chance to talk about if you have a website or anything you want to mention.
Yeah,
I do. I do. My new website is ChristineHeinrichs.com, and I've got a lot of different information up there. And you were talking a little bit, Joe, about artworks. Look in the next issue of Backyard Poultry Magazine. There's going to be an article about some poultry art that is owned by a company in the Midwest, but is not on display, and I'm going to be looking around for some museum that would be willing to display this. So keep an eye out for that, and I hope you'll enjoy this beautiful artwork that's coming out. In the next issue. Yeah.
Yep. I'm always looking for pictures to hang around my office and my house, you know, nice close-up pictures. And, boy, you got them in there. And like I said, you know, I just hate to cut them out of your book, but, boy, am I tempted.
Now, Joe, no defacing books. Take them to the copy shop, copy the page, and hang up the copy, okay?
That's probably a better solution.
Well, Christine, yeah, that's what you ought to do. You ought to frame these pictures or wrap these pictures, because I know I'd buy some.
That's a thought. That's a thought, Joe, and certainly that will be the case with these this collection of 72 poultry portraits, actually, that were painted in the 20th century.
Well,
by poultry
we are out of time. We'll have to have you come back and talk about that next time.
Definitely.
And folks, you're listening to Country Joe's Chicken Show. CountryJoe'sChickenShow.com.
Rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. Now we have a new guest with us. We have with us Pat Foreman, who we have talked to in the past about Occupy Backyards and chickens and you. And I understand, Pat, that you just are starting a chicken stimulus package.
Sounds interesting.
Yes. Sorry, I just had an... Yeah. Gosh, Karen and Joe, there's so much happening on the chicken movement front. It's so exciting, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me just briefly tell you about the chicken stimulus package. It is that the organizers of the Richmond, Virginia, the capital of Virginia, Home and Garden Show. It's one of the largest garden shows on the East Coast. Wanted to feature chickens because the state capitol legalized them last year. And since then, there are towns and cities all around the area just going like dominoes, legalizing family flocks. So they were going to give us a booth, and we said, well, gosh, why don't we do a chicken stimulus package? And they didn't have any idea what that was, but they said, okay, you know, whatever you want to do. So I contacted some hatcheries, and Marie McMurray came through and donated 300 heritage. We wanted to feature heritage baby chicks. There were four breeds, so the owners got an eye candy flock. They were Black Osterwolf, Buff Warpington, Americana, and Plymouth Bardrock.
Wow.
Yeah, so the baby chicks came 2 days before the polar vortex hit Virginia. It was like this huge cold was coming in. So I brooded these 300 chicks in my office. and they did great. We only lost six out of all 300. I mean, they were just in really, really good shape and good healthy chicks, and then took them over to the Home and Garden Show, and nobody talked about anything but chickens coming and going. That's what the guards, the gates, and the storekeepers told us. It was always chickens. No bathtubs and countertops, just chickens. And we were mobbed. We were absolutely mobbed. I could barely get in when I was carrying the baby chicks in. I mean, the people had been waiting 2 hours to get these four little baby chicks, and within the first hour and a half after we got them all tucked in and, you know, nice and stabilized, we had our quota for the day, which was 100, to give away 100 a day to 25 families each day. So we ended up giving away 76 flocks to first-time flock owners. They agreed to several things. There was an adoption contract and an application, and in the adoption contract, they would do all the humane things and take care of them. We said they promised there would be no chick left behind, so if anyone couldn't keep them for any reason, they should just call the Gossamer Foundation, the nonprofit that's behind all this. And then they also agreed to participate in follow-up surveys in 6 months and 1 year to see what impact it had on the local foods, or at least their perception of local foods and what their experience was. And then there's also a pay-it-forward component to this. So we wanted to see how they would do their tithing forward, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. So in a nutshell, that was that particular chicken stimulus package. That's the fourth one that we've done so far of different sizes. But we're hoping to have these sort of as a community kind of response all across the country.
Mm-hmm. So how's it look like it's going? Going pretty good, do you think?
Well, yes. It's on the internet, Facebook, all, you know, pictures of little baby chicks and growing all over the place. It's sort of, in that sense, created kind of a culture over there. But my mastermind group and I, I think chickens are truly the gateway to local foods, which is the gateway to healthy, optimal health for people as well as livestock and sort of our future. That's Gossamer Foundation, the nonprofit I work with, its mission is to support global sustainability and local foods, because we can't have one without the other. That's what we believe is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about doing maybe something like, let's see what you and your audience thinks of this one. I introduced it at the Mother Earth Fair a couple of weeks ago, and they loved it. They applauded. But what do you think about Wings Across America?
Wow.
The million chicken march to enable local foods.
That's as long as you don't expect a million chickens to march with you.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's a chick thing, absolutely a chick thing. But anyway, they the heritage breeds, you know, they bring more than just history to them. They'll go out and forage their eggs. I think I would love to see some studies. They're starting to come out, but I think the heritage eggs, because the birds are slower to grow, they don't lay as many. And I suspect from my animal science studies, you know, you could have really something fast and big and quick, or you could and relatively cheap, because that would, or you could have it grow slower and be a better product. You know,
well, that's what I did with my meat chickens. I went to the Red Rangers from the White Cornish.
Okay. And how long did it take them to grow out?
Yep, and it's taken me a few weeks longer to get them up to the weight, but I don't mind, because I raise all my own organic food for them.
Excellent, good for you. Yeah.
I'm sure the chickens that you raise, organic and are local to the people who get them. I mean, you're not freezing them and mailing them off to Alaska or anything. They are local to your people.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they taste a lot different than what they could get at the supermarket.
A lot.
Well, the eggs as well. The meat, there's a huge difference in the meat. I mean, I could go into that in more detail, but that might even be another whole show about some of the studies that are about the meat.
And the eggs themselves taste different as well.
They do.
Yes.
They do. The yolks are much brighter. You get that nice orange, you know, and they hold together after you crack the egg. It's very, very a whole big difference.
Yes, and it's a different food product, literally.
Mm-hmm. You're local in the Virginia area, so the breeds you chose are heritage breeds that are good for that area as well, right?
Yeah, we're pretty lucky here. We're relatively temperate, so we can go with colder as well as almost about any breed does pretty well here. We had a couple of really cold days that I have some black Australorps and Buff Orpingtons, and just the very tips of their comb, the roosters got a little singed, but they were fine. I mean, they're fine now.
Wow.
There are breeds for different climates. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, we are running out of time for this segment. Pat, will you stick with us? Because, of course, we not only could we spend a whole show talking about that other, but we have a lot more to talk about here today.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Absolutely. If we had a chance to just talk briefly about the chickens and new training series that leads to the Backyard Chicken Keeper Certification, I'd love to just to brief you on that.
Okay.
Yep. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show here on CountryJoesChickenShow.com. Country Joe's Chicken Show. Joe Barber and I are talking with Pat Foreman. And one thing that we wanted to talk about is the Chickens and You training series. Did I get that right, Pat?
Oh, you did, Karen. Thank you very much. It's something we've been working on for about 5 years now, and we're going online tomorrow with our very first series, our primary series. It's nine courses over 10 sessions. It'll be two courses a week, and the titles we cover are, starts with the overview, chickens, the enablers of local foods, and why it's so important that they really, really be employed as a livestock in local foods to get their gateway to other livestock. Managing laying hens for egg production, brooding and educating baby chicks, not just brooding, chicken whispering, discover the chicken you never knew, extraordinary eggs, the tips, tricks, and traps of egg management and cooking. And boy, I got to tell you, Joe and Karen, there is so much there about egg management that could really, it's no yoke. It's astonishing, jaw-dropping kind of stuff.
Now, how do we get to hear all of this? You go online?
Oh, wait a minute. There's just four more courses. Primary poultry healthcare and the poultry's pharmacy. Introduction to Gardening with and for Chickens, Composting and Biomass Recycling with Chicken Helpers, and finally, The Way of the Hen, Incubating Eggs and Brooding Chicks Naturally. So to find out about these, thanks for asking, just go to Chickens and You. It's ANDYOU, Chickens, ANDYOU.com. And there's all the course descriptions are all there. There's information about how to register. The textbook is City Chicks. It's one of my books that I've I've written, and it's just so exciting because we've done the live. We can do it as a live 2-day super intensive, but that's so limiting to the number that we can reach. So to go online the way we're happening and the response we're getting is just so rewarding and I mean truly exciting. I'm getting goosebumps here just talking about it. I can hardly wait till tomorrow night.
Sounds fun.
Or chicken bumps, as the case may be. You know.
Yeah, chicken bumps. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. Boy, there's a lot to digest there on that course.
Wow, is it something you'd recommend for someone who has already started out raising chickens, or someone should do the course before they get their first chicks, or what level of person is this for?
It doesn't matter because I gave a talk a couple weeks ago at the Mother Earth Fair about getting started with family flocks, and probably 3/4 of the people there had been wannabes for years. I mean, literally years. And so finally, they came up to me afterwards and said, okay, we're going to do it. And then people from before had come and say, here's my pictures. Want to see my flock? Want to see, you know, here's my coop. You got pictures of your kids? No, but look at this rooster. So the thing is, it's not just about raising and keeping chickens. I mean, there's so many fine books and information out about that. It's about employing chickens. Chickens are probably the most underemployed workforce in America. And when we can put them to work building topsoil and biomass recycling and replacing a lot of the plant enhancement products, you know, the insecticides, herbicides, and fertilizers, we've got a closed organic, dynamic, local healthy food producing systems right in your backyard.
That's right. And I bet there aren't many bugs that survive in Joe's chicken yard.
Not at all.
No.
And, you know, he's in Florida, and everybody who goes down to Florida says, I never knew there could be so many bugs. How does nobody talk about this? And, of course, we know that at Joe's place.
No, they love them. I'll tell you. They love those little lizards that run by there, too. Boy, they get right after them. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, everything.
They'll even eat scorpions.
And, yep.
I tell people I have 2 dogs and too many cats, but no ticks or fleas in my zone 1 area where the chickens roam. I mean, none.
Yeah.
So I don't use a Band-Aid or any of those tick and flea control products. I don't need them. I got my chickens.
Right.
And, you know, we even talked the last show we had Kermit Blackwood on talking about peacocks and peahens, and peacocks will even eat baby snakes.
Mm. Oh, so do chickens.
Yeah.
I've got a picture of a chicken pulling a little baby snake Robin pulls a worm. It's pretty gruesome, really, but
not for snake fans.
Baby rats and mice. Yeah.
And of course, when you have chickens, you have, like any living creature, when you have a creature, you have poop, and so chickens produce fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. I get a lot of people that are after me for that. A lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The chicken fertilizer rivals commercial fertilizer in NPK. I mean, it's great stuff. I did a paper with Cheryl Long, the editor of Mother Earth News, and we estimated that if you micromanaged your flock's chicken manure, you could recoup about 70% of the feed costs simply by not having to buy organic chicken fertilizer. I mean, it was amazing. I was surprised that they came out even that high. But you know, it's one of the products. Chickens are a multi-level being. They bring so much literally to the table and to your garden and to the soil. They're stacking. They're like a stacking the stacking species.
It's true. Yeah. Boy, I get people that fight to come here and get it. You know, I schedule it, and boy, they're right here to get it. And I should start selling it. But I give it away. You know, they shovel it out, and I let them take it. So.
Oh, wow. I'd start charging for it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. 20 pounds of cock-a-doodle-doo, that's a dried organic chicken manure, is now $25. It's almost, it's over $1 a pound.
Oh, my.
And I smile when I'm here in the greater Boston area and I go to a market, a produce market, and I walk past pallets of chicken-based fertilizer as I'm walking into the produce market. And it always makes me smile thinking, people pay good money for chicken droppings when all you have to do is get yourself some chickens and they will provide.
Boy, they do.
That's right. That's right. And those bagged chicken droppings are really bedding, chicken manure mixed in with bedding and dried.
Yep.
So you're not even really getting pure chicken manure. That'd be too hot. Mm-hmm. You know, so. And
that's
chicken
right,
tea,
you know?
Apparently loves compost.
Now, how long do you recommend before you put it on a garden, fresh out of the chicken coop? You know, how long do you let it rest or whatever?
Well, I've got a system, Joe, that is a little different, and I know some don't agree with me, but I have a threshold around where the chickens roost at night. About half of their chicken droppings are deposited at night, and in that area then is deep litter. It's 6 to 8 inches of wood shavings and dried grass and all kinds of stuff. So when the chickens drop their manure at night, then in the morning, of course, they hop down, and I just toss some scratch grains along the side. So they hop in there, and they start scratching and pecking before you know it, it's covered over.
Uh-huh.
So there's no smells, no flies, no. So I can let that go, depending on how many chickens I've got, for 3 to 6 months. And then that nitrogen from the chicken manure locks up with the carbon from the carbon sources, the shavings and the grasses, and literally it starts composting there. And then I feel like I put that directly around my fruit trees, but if I'm going to use it directly in the garden, I do let it sit I don't side dress vegetables that I have going with it, in other words.
Well, you know.
So to answer your question, it kind of depends, but I don't do much little pile composting anymore because it's just goes so fast.
Wow.
Well, you know, I hate to tell you this, both, but we are out of time for this week's show.
Darn. Oh.
But I know, Pat, that you will say it with us as we do now at the end of every show.
Yeah, we got it from you.
That's right. May the flock
be with you.